want to thank everybody for being here, so we'll call the Technical Advisory Committee meeting to order. And first order of business is the approval of the minutes. Hopefully, everyone had an opportunity to review the minutes. If you did so, are there any corrections and/or additions to the minutes? If not, entertain a motion to accept.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Approved. So we're going to move on to old business, project update. Pam?
Under the City of Evansville projects, the Walnut Street project, when the project was originally proposed and entered into the STIP, it was the entire corridor. So they're coming back now, and we're dividing it up into three sections. Two stakeholder meetings have been held. They were held the week of July 30th, and a preliminary field check for, actually it's for phase one and phase two, is scheduled for August 16th of 2018. Washington Avenue, 2nd Street, Parrott Street.
Can I ask you just a quick question, just for everyone, does everybody know what the phases are, where they physically are?
Actually, we've got a TIP amendment where we're making the changes.
Yeah. Check, okay. I saw that, but I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, it's a good question because it's.
Yeah, we'll cover it under the TIP amendment.
I'm probably more familiar with it than some folks. So.
Hold on to your snuggies.
Okay. Yeah, no problem.
Washington, 2nd, Parrott Street. This is another project that's being divided up into two phases. Phase one will be 2nd Street, Washington Avenue intersection, and then along Washington Avenue to Parrott Street. And phase two will be the 2nd Street, Parrott Street, Jefferson Street intersection. The three parcels are secured, and they've been sent to the city for payment. And those three parcels, I believe, are on phase one. Weinbach Avenue Road Diet, the project is scheduled to relet on September 12th.
There he is.
Evans Monpio.
Yes, hey.
Hey, Thomas, we just got started.
Sorry, I just stepped away from my desk at the wrong time. Okay.
That's no problem.
We're on the project update. We're talking about Weinbach Avenue Road Diet. If you recall, the project was let previously. No bids. The bids were not awardable, and so that's why it's being relet on September 12th. Pigeon Creek Greenway, the high rail corridor. Stone subgrade treatment and subbase work is complete for the entire trail length. All pipe installations are complete and all light pole foundations are installed. Mid-Levee Corridor, Stage 3 plans are being finalized for submittal to NDOT for their review and comment. Vanderburgh County Projects, Green River Road. The project letting was supposed to be yesterday. For some reason, it's been moved, though all of the lettings have been moved to Friday. I'm still trying to find out why, but it isn't just this project, all lettings.
There's having electronic problems.
They were having electronic problems? Okay.
The site.
So, but it will be left on Friday. Warwick County, Bell Road, pavement design has been approved. Lincoln Avenue project, which is under construction. Paving on phases 1, 2, and 3 is complete. The HMA surface did not meet NDOT specifications. And there has been an agreement reached that the pavement will be observed. There will be testing done, and cost adjustments and or replacement will be done as appropriate. Warwick Trail Safe Routes to School project. The preliminary field check was held on July 26th. Section 106 report was approved, and a level 2 design exception was approved. And then the NDOT Boonville Bypass. The project opening is expected in sometime this month.
Any questions, comments, or anything? Thank you, Pam. So we're going to move on to new business, and the first new business would be amendments to the TIP, and their approval will be requested. So.
Okay. First TIP amendment is the division of the Walnut Street Corridor into the three phases. The phases will be from US 41 to Lincoln Park Drive. Martin Luther King Jr. to US 41 and Lincoln Park Drive to Van Avenue. The preliminary engineering will be increased on the first phase. Actually, all the preliminary engineering for the entire corridor is on the first phase, which is Walnut from 41 to Lincoln. And there's adjustments to the right-of-way and the construction costs. And the second two phases that are being added, we will be adding right-of-way costs and construction costs as noted. Second Street, Washington Avenue, Parrott Street. The first phase will be, as I talked about in the project update, intersection of Washington Avenue and then a portion of Washington Avenue. The only amendment that we're making to the TIP at this point in time is just changing the limits of that project. And then the second phase will be added to the project, or added to the TIP. And all phases for that, all project development phases for the second phase are outside of the current fiscal years in the TIP. So they're all going to be shown as cost to complete costs.
Any questions? Do we want to handle all the amendments just as one motion? You all right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think we're missing...
I thought we weren't there.
There were three NDOTs.
Yeah.
NDOT projects as well. So,
was it on the back of the page?
Yes.
Yeah, but it's not on the back of the page.
Yeah, we have to do the printing.
Where's Lincoln Park Drive?
Lincoln Park Drive is where?
It is the intersection right before you get to the university.
Okay.
Oh, I've got a... If you received it in your email, I have it on the back. There are three. You want to? Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. Appreciate
there
it.
You be.
So, Indiana Department of Transportation has asked us to do three amendments. State Road 65 bridge replacement project is being added to the TIP for PE in 2019. The I-64 replaces superstructure over Plum Creek, both eastbound and westbound lanes. That also is being added for PE. And then US 41 pavement replacement from north of Lloyd Expressway to 57. The PE is being added as well. And those we action on.
So we'd entertain a motion to approve the amendments to the TIP. Is there a second?
Second.
Any additional discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They are approved. So we're going to talk, this is just informational. We'll be talking about modifications to the TIP. So Pam, I think that's still you, right?
Sure, yep. NDOT requested two modifications to the TIP. State Road 61 we're adding preliminary engineering. And the cost to complete is out, and that includes right-of-way and construction. It's outside the time frame of the TIP. And we're adding various locations in the Vinces District. It's a pavement marking project. Both of these projects are called group projects, which is why they're being amended and modified into the TIP as opposed to amended. And they're just for informational purposes.
Informational purposes only. Okay. Any questions in that regard? Comments? Otherwise, why don't we move on to our next order of business, which would be I-69 update. So Dan, I think that's you, Dan?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks. I know I recognize some faces in the room, but maybe not everyone. But for those who don't know me, my name is Dan Prevo. I'm with Parsons. We're the lead consultant on the I-69 Ohio River Crossing project, and I'm the environmental lead for the project, so I'm the one responsible for the NEPA document, that environmental impact statement. So I was asked to come and give an update to the group about some of the work we've been doing. I'm not sure the last time somebody updated this group, but we'll go back. I got a couple months worth of update anyway, and certainly if there are any questions about any aspect of the project, I'll do my best to answer those after. Feel free to interject, too, and I'm happy to be interrupted. That's fine. For folks who have been following the project, especially over this summer and late spring, you'll remember that we've been doing a lot of outreach over the last over those months to get feedback on some updates we've made to the alternatives. We've also been doing a lot of focus on tolling, since that's obviously such a central part of this project and certainly one of the larger issues to be discussed and decided upon as part of the project. And I'll talk in a little bit about, we've also been doing targeting some of that outreach at those communities, in particular low-income communities that might be have the potential to be most affected by that as well. So you know, what we've been hearing through through this outreach is that you know, there's a general general preference, not universal certainly, but it's a general preference for the central alternative one, and that's I've got a handout here. I'm not going to go. I don't have a map in my presentation about the with the actual. You know, showing the actual alternatives. I'm guessing most folks are fairly familiar with the alternatives we're talking about. But in the big, you know, fold out here in the middle, there's a map of the three alternatives that's still under consideration. This is the same map we've been, you know, sharing, I think, since probably, well, May, was the last time this got updated. So this is nothing new here. Here's been following us. But also that there's a, you know, a preference for the existing US 41 bridge that's proposed to remain with Central Alternative 1 to be toll-free, you know, not have tolls on it. So, you know, in Henderson, we're hearing, you know, there's an interesting dynamic going on, you know, between the we'll call it two groups of alternatives. You've got the West alternatives, which follow the existing US 41 corridor, versus the Central alternative, which is about a mile, you know, mile and a half, 2 miles to the east. You know, there's this dynamic where the you know, some of the residents, certainly in the Henderson area, are concerned about the impacts to their property. You know, there's a lot of homes that are potentially displaced by those alternatives, either one. On the other hand, those alternatives, and those alternatives also have, you know, would affect a number of businesses as well. On the other hand, Central Alternative 1, you know, impacts very few residences, no businesses, but, you know, folks are viewing, you know, the potential for that Central Alternative 1 to effectively function as a bypass for that down, for that Henderson commercial strip, which raises concerns about economic, you know, productivity and activity in that area. And so there's a, you know, some mixed emotions there. I think a lot of folks aren't even quite, you know, decided maybe internally on which one they think is, you know, is a more important issue to be concerned about. So. You know, we've also heard that, you know, there's a lot of concern about, or a lot of interest in what happens to the existing bridges. West Alternative 2, as it's proposed, would remove both of those existing bridges and have the new I-69 bridge carry all traffic for across the river for the region. And so that's, you know, there's a lot of, been a lot of interest and, you know, generally, you know, not much support for that scenario. That's kind of a broad overview of what we've been hearing. I want to just talk a little bit about, we called our community conversations that we held a couple months back. And these were a series of outreach meetings. There were six in all, three each in each of the states. And these were really targeted at what we call environmental justice communities. Is everybody familiar with that term? I mean, this is, I'm kind of talking to a group that probably is familiar with that term. But it's, you know, identified low-income and minority populations or communities that have higher proportions of low-income and minority populations. So we wanted to make sure we reached out to those folks. That, you know, because those are some folks who often don't come to, you know, public meetings necessarily when we hold our public open houses. So what we wanted to do was to go have a series of meetings in those communities, make it, you know, as easy as possible to come. Also, as I don't want to say casual, but as informal and accessible, you know, from a kind of the dynamic of the meeting perspective as possible. So these were a little, you know, these were more smaller. They were in, you know, library rooms. They were in community centers, those sorts of things. You know, some, you know, there was a brief presentation associated with each, but I mean, then after that, it was kind of an open dialogue was kind of the format. We took questions. We encouraged conversation and input, and it was more of a dialogue than a presentation. So we know, you know, we sent out to reach as many folks as we could. We certainly broadcast those meetings through our traditional, you know, notification methods, email, our website, our Facebook page, our Twitter account, our, you know, the local media, those sorts of things. But we also, we identified those EJ communities closest to the project, and we sent notices to every single one of their houses. We sent out 6,000 postcards using the Every Door direct mail service through the post office. So every house in, you know, those areas that we identified got a notification. So really trying to get that message out that this is a good opportunity to come and learn, but also give feedback. through those six meetings, we had a total of a little over 250 attendees. When people came to the meeting, we asked them to take a sticker dot, you know, colored sticker dot, and put it on a map for us that we had of the, not just the project area, but the, you know, it was kind of the, you know, probably southern half of Vandenberg County, northern half of Henderson County kind of range. You know, tell us where you live. You know, we wanted to know where folks were coming from, you know, make sure that we were reaching the communities that we were targeting. So this was the result of who came to each of the meetings. Obviously, some folks didn't necessarily come to the meeting only that was in their community, but you know, we feel like we did a pretty good job of getting folks from those neighborhoods. Now, we can't, you know, say for certain whether we reached the, you know, low income. You know, we didn't ask people how much they made when they came in the door, those sorts of questions. But you know, we you know, did what we felt was the best we could in terms of giving them the opportunity to attend. So, you know, some of the things we heard during those meetings, you know, folks don't, you know, this won't come as a surprise, nobody really likes tolls and would prefer to have, you know, roadways be, you know, toll-free. You know, there was a concern that when it comes to tolling, that the folks on the Henderson side would bear more of the financial burden than the folks on the Evansville side, just a general recognition that there's more, you know, greater flow of traffic, you know, Henderson residents coming to Evansville for work or services or those sorts of things. You know, but in the end, most people were okay if only the new I-69 bridge was tolled and that a, you know, another bridge remained free. That seemed to be, you know, generally accepted. You know, as long as they had that free option was the thought. You know, we certainly heard from some folks who were concerned that they might, you know, either reduce the number of trips they make or change the trips they take. You know, a small number might, you know, so they might move across the river as a result of, you know, if that was the, you know, part of their daily commute. And then we also did talk, we encouraged people to give us feedback on how the impacts of tolling might be mitigated. And obviously the first choice was leave one of the free bridges or leave one of the bridges free. But you know, we also talked about, you know, some of the other mitigation measures that are used in other parts of the country on similar projects. You know, sometimes it's as simple as making, you know, transponders as absolutely available as possible, making them, you know, reloadable with cash so that you don't have to have a credit card or a bank account even in order to reload those. Because it is those with transponders that typically get a lower rate just due to the transaction costs associated with tolling. You know, we also talked about, you know, the possibility of setting up some kind of discounted toll program for low-income users, you know, so those who could verify that they met some income threshold, you know, might get a discounted toll rate. Any questions about those community conversations? I'm going to kind of move into a couple alternatives things.
But so on the second bullet point, that is only specifically referring to commuting patterns in terms of residents feeling that they're going to shoulder the burden because based upon commuting patterns of people going north versus south.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a tax burden, not a, you know, yep, big picture funding problem.
Okay,
between
so that
the two
that
states.
Wasn't
no, it's just the tolling part.
The
of
tolling
it, really.
Portion of it.
And what one of the interesting things we found was that we asked people why they traveled across the bridge. We also did a public survey that we sent out to, I think it was 4,000 people in these in the project area. One of the things that I think surprised us a little bit was most folks, you know, there was a relatively small number of folks who said, I use the bridge every day to get to work. There are a lot of people who said, I use the bridge every day or almost every day, but it's for shopping, for, you know, medical appointments. It's, you know, it wasn't that there was, you know, 80% of the people using it were going to work every day, you know, to and from work every single day that way. It was just a data point that was a little, you know, informative, certainly not, I won't say it was, you know, earth-shatteringly surprising, but, you know, it was something we noted in there.
But you saw the resistance drop considerably if one of the existing bridges and one of the alternatives would stay that would be non-toll,
correct?
And that resistance sort of was removed from that
space. Yes. Yeah, I think, you know, folks want the ability to get across the river with, I mean, that's their preference, but they would like the ability to get across the river without having to pay a toll. And if the new bridge, you know, if the new bridge has to be tolled to make it happen, you know, that's okay. You know, I'm generalizing sentiment, I don't, but you know, that's okay, but as long as we have a free option. there's a general sense of acceptance. Any other questions about those outreach?
Did you do any research? If you have one free, how much portion of the residents would choose the free one instead of the old one?
So you're talking about the traffic distribution between the two bridges? Yes. I mean, we've done, you know, we've been using the MPO's, you know, travel demand model and looking at tolling, both tolling scenarios.
No, so, I mean, from the people's perception, have you done any survey to them?
Oh, which one would they use?
Yeah, which one would they use if there's one free, one toll? My guess is that...
I don't think we asked them, you know, if one was free, would you always use that one? Or I don't think that was part of our survey. That wasn't our, you know, it wasn't part of our intent. We had a lot of things to ask them about, and that, you know, just wasn't something we fit in. You know, we're I mean, you know, we built the toll model. We built a tolling function onto the MPO's model, and you know, that's where we're you know, kind of relying on for those projections of which bridge folks will use.
Just kind of building on that question a little bit, maybe a secondary concern that they would have, and maybe they hadn't thought about it yet, but if they use the free bridge and it's down to just two lanes, how much time added to their commute might they have?
Right. No, and that is something we did hear, you know, like, oh, well, you know, I think there's some sense that everybody who currently uses the bridge is now going to try to use the free one, and now you've only got two lanes. Our modeling is showing that we're going to, you know, you would get, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something, it was short of half, but it was something, you know, approaching half that would use the toll facility. So we are, you know, we would be reducing, you know, substantially reducing the number of vehicles on those existing bridges. I believe, and this will obviously be part of our DEIS that comes out in just a couple months, the level of service projected on the existing bridge, even if it was free and only two, you know, only one bridge there, is similar to what it is today. You know, there wasn't any degradation of that level of service. You know, I think what we, you know, I think this group knows Brian Aldridge, is familiar with Brian Aldridge, who's, you know, I know he's done some work with this group in the past. He's the one leading our traffic modeling effort. You know, one of the things he regularly, you know, talks to me about is the, you know, so much of that congestion that people associated with the bridge is due to one of two things. One, it's either an incident, you know, an accident, a flat tire, a broken down vehicle, or it's really related to the traffic signals in the US 41 corridor. You know, the bridge itself, you know, doesn't have any barriers really to, you know, to generate a congestion point. You know, it's his sense anyway. That so, you know, I think they're, you know, one of the things that I think moving forward with the project as we, once we identify a preferred alternative, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, depending on which alternative, regardless of which alternative it is, really, is there something else that should happen to US 41, depending on which alternative that is, because even if it's one of the west corridors, the dynamic there is going to change. Are there opportunities to do something with that roadway, whether it's, you know, access management, whether it's, you know, certainly if, you know, if you think about the, depending on which, you know, the volume of traffic might be substantially reduced to the point where you no longer need four through lanes, two full left turn lanes, you know, what do you do with that to maybe make it work better too? You know, I think that's something going forward that, you know, the states have talked about looking at. So I think that, you know, might be able to address some of those congestion causing issues as well.
One item that I've had discussions with many people on, you know, we talk about the, and you mentioned it's about half a reduction of traffic if on the modeling that we use the toll facility. So your traffic on 41 is half. Well, you're losing half of your travel lanes. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you're losing the majority of your truck traffic because it's going on toll facility.
Yes.
So you are increasing the fatigue life of the bridge. But you still have similar amount of vehicular traffic on one structure that you do today because...
Right. No, certainly we, I mean, in terms of that fatigue life thing, I mean, I think if the volume is the same, the number of vehicles is the same, it's essentially, there's no change kind of in that pattern and future. But yeah, there's this, you know, those through trucks, there's a sense that, you know, there's a shift of those, and I don't have the numbers with me on what we're forecasting would shift from the 41 bridges over to that I-69 bridge, but yeah, there's certainly a hope that that helps extend the life of those bridges by some factor.
Yeah.
It's always.
But at the end of the day, you still have the same fatigue cycles on that bridge, and you still have the same amount of maintenance, basically, that
yes.
you're going to have to do on that structure.
Yeah, there's a pretty minimal. We actually did a Stantec, who is Stantec and Parsons collaborated on an analysis of the existing bridges and what it would, you know, what would be required on them over the next out to 2062, which was essentially 35 years beyond the open to traffic date of the West alternatives, if those were chosen, because those we assume would take a little longer to implement. So we looked out to 2062 on what would be required on those two bridges, and looking at a couple of different traffic scenarios as well. You know, if we even looked at options. If you totally remove truck traffic, what would we, you know, what effect would we expect that to have on the maintenance and the maintenance costs over that period of time? And there was a modest, I don't want to say it was some drastic difference in the costs if you were able to remove all trucks. But yeah, essentially we assumed that if you removed a bridge, the maintenance costs on that bridge would basically be the same as under a no-build scenario where you still had, you know, effectively half of the Cross River traffic on each of those bridges. So, yeah. Veered from public outreach,
sorry.
But that's totally fine. I'm happy to go whichever direction.
I'm good at throwing mud on the wall.
So there have been a couple very minor modifications to the alternatives that I wanted to let folks know about. On both West Alternative 1 and West Alternative 2, just south of the US 60 interchange, we identified an old cemetery associated with the Barrett property. If folks are familiar with, you know, kind of behind the Walmart or off to the side of the Walmart where a new medical building has been built, it's kind of a little, if you look at aerial mapping, you can see exactly what I'm talking about. Kind of right up against the existing highway, there's a little wooded patch that pops out from the right-of-way, and there are some old gravestones in there. It's not a maintained cemetery. We don't believe it to have any eligibility for the National Register or anything of that sort, but we still felt it was something we should try to avoid. So essentially we've modified the design through that area to use a retaining wall to make sure that we didn't have to grade into that cemetery. You know, it was a couple hundred feet of retaining wall versus having to deal with the cemetery there. On West Alternative 2, at the Elm Street and Watson Lane intersection, Watson Lane is where one of the interchanges would be for West Alternative 2. Immediately to the west of there, where Watson intersected Elm Street, basically that intersection was ending up too close to the interchange, so we shifted that intersection a bit to the west just by, you know, 100 feet or so, or something on that order, in order to give a little more space there. There's also a proposed pedestrian path along the west side of the interstate under West Alternative 2 that would have basically put a pedestrian crossing almost, you know, right in the same area where folks are coming off the highway and trying to merge, you know, turn right onto Watson Lane. So we wanted to get a little bit more separation for that. Had a small effect on the property impacts in that area, so but we felt it was a safety, you know, public safety issue that we needed to address. And then on Central Alternative 1, this, you know, certainly the largest of the changes. As I mentioned, some folks, especially the businesses along the US 41 commercial corridor, had expressed concerns about the bypass effect of Central Alternative 1. And if folks may remember the original design for Central Alternative 1 at the south end, where it connected to existing 69, due to some floodplain issues, floodway issues associated with North Fort Canoe Creek, the interchange was had kind of an odd design. Essentially, if you were coming north on 69 and wanted to go to the commercial strip, you essentially had to head northeast on the new I-69 alignment about a mile, and then exit the highway and come back, essentially just south of the Merrill development, and it really added kind of at least an extra mile to the travel. I mean, more like probably a mile and a half. It was kind of a 2 mile loop. You were cutting out about a half mile, but you know, it's kind of adding this extra distance. And there was a reason, as I said, to do that floodway that we designed it that way. But we, you know, just given the level of concern of the business community on the US 41 commercial corridor, we've modified that interchange to make it a direct connection. It's going to require more structure, more bridge for some of those ramps. It's going to increase the cost. I mean, not, you know, extraordinarily, but, you know, there's a cost associated with that, you know, in order to avoid impacts to the floodway. But that was, it was the, you know, project team's decision that that was the right thing to do in that area to address those.
Do you have a sense of what the cost increase might be?
More than 10 million, less than 30 million. I don't have a detailed estimate. You know, it's a, in the scheme of the project, it's a minor number, but it's not a number that we want to, you know, there's a reason, as I said, we tried to design the most efficient functional interchange we could originally, and that was, you know, but. We've also updated the cost estimates of each of the alternatives. You know, the cost that we were, you know, we didn't change the design, you know, the assumptions about the typical section of the roadway or anything substantially. But what we've done, you know, you'll notice some, you know, the numbers certainly changed. So I wanted to kind of convey what happened there. Early on in the project, up until, you know, early part of this year, we were using very conceptual cost estimating techniques. You know, this was square footages. For example, you know, you take the main span bridge and you can, you know, say, okay, it's, you know, this wide times this long, and bridges of this type generally cost in this, you know, this magnitude of cost, you know, however many $100 a square foot. Do the math, and that's, you know, what we did. What we've done since then is we actually, you know, gave the preliminary designs to Parsons has a construction group. You know, we actually, in some parts of the country, we actually build. Have folks who go out and build things, not just design them. So we gave the preliminary designs to our contractor arm and asked them how would they bid the project. And it's more of a what they call a bottoms-up or contractor-styled estimate, where they literally look at, okay, how would I build this? How many, you know, people is it going to require to do, you know, it's more of a, you know, quantity-based and, you know, labor and equipment based estimate. So and we found this to be a much more accurate, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing square footage estimates. It's the right answer for early in the project, but there's a lot of assumptions in there. And so we found that this is a good technique to, you know, provide a more accurate estimate. What we found was that it provided a little greater differentiation between the alternatives. It better, and I think it really better recognized some of the complexities associated with building the west alternatives. You know, clearly building the central alternative one is, you're dealing with mostly, you know, agricultural fields. There's certainly some terrain issues there. You know, there's some cut and fill areas, but, you know, on the whole, it's an agricultural setting versus the west alternatives, which are a very urban environment, lots of utilities, lots of maintenance and traffic issues, those sorts of things. So that was captured in here. And as a result, you start to see, you know, a range of about $300 million differentiating the three alternatives now. Keep in mind also that these are what we call year of construction cost estimates. So these recognize the effect of inflation. You know, the central alternative one is expected could get to construction sooner than west alternative because there's less complexity with the right-of-way process. It would also be probably faster to construct. We've assumed about a 1 year less construction duration with the central alternative compared to the two west alternatives. So that effect of just those 2 years actually makes a noticeable difference between the alternatives. We've also, you know, in order to recognize the role of those existing bridges, the existing 41 bridges in this, you know, we've included the cost to operate and maintain those bridges over that 35-year period. You know, recognizing that some of the alternatives require keeping either, you know, one or zero of those bridges versus also the no build, which, you know, just recognizing that the states are going to have to pay that sum of money if both bridges stay in service for, you know, that duration.
Can I ask this question on the roadway and bridge operations maintenance between West 1 and West 2? That interconnection there between basically 41 and the existing bridges, West 1 assumes one bridge remains open and the new bridge, and West 2 assumes existing bridges close and just one new bridge. So in the document, in the alternative documentation, are you somehow clarifying that that portion of the West alternatives are kind of interchangeable in a sense, or do you follow what I'm saying? If you use West 1 in a situation where you have one new bridge and no existing bridge, your operation maintenance goes down for West 1. So West 1 could be 1.65, 1.68 million versus 1.81, and West 2 could become 1.81.
Well, as part of our alternative screening process, we looked at a total of 9 different bridge configurations. We looked at, you know, essentially keeping both bridges, one bridge, or no bridge for each of these alternatives. And through that process, we, there were some cost factors, but there was also some operational and safety factors that went into that analysis. That actually, I think we published, it was the screening report supplement, I want to say it was last fall.
About this time last year, a little after this time.
Maybe it was the first, I don't know. It's on
about
our
a
website.
Year ago. About a
it's
year
on
ago.
Our website. Welcome yeah. to go check it out. We've determined that, you know, we feel that these are the best configurations for each of the alternatives. It's not to say you couldn't keep both bridges with West Alternative 1. There are some issues associated with doing that.
No, I'm saying West 1, West 2, you have zero existing
right.
bridges. West 1, you're saying
one
existing is there.
Right.
But if you made West 1 similar to West 2, your operation maintenance would go down very similar. And what
yes.
you're saying is
yeah,
under
well,
the screening
I mean, you can,
process,
right.
we determined a West 1 scenario with no free bridge or no existing bridge was better than
what you presented. Yeah, it was less desirable for a number of reasons. You know, that change could be made, but it would be, you know, there may also be other costs associated with that too, because some of the
modeling had a different.
Well, and some of the interchange assumptions that we made with each of these alternatives was different. For example, for West 1, where you've got an existing bridge remaining, there's a couple places, one on each side of the river actually, where essentially that existing US 41 bridge would function as the local roadway providing access to Waterworks Road on the Indiana side, or on the north side of the river, and then Wolf Hills and Stratman on the south side. You know, you've got a good connection if you use that existing US 41 bridge. With West Alternative 2, with both of those bridges removed, what we assumed was we'd put an interchange at both of those locations to provide that access so that you didn't have to go to Watson or 41 in order to get to those
yeah,
areas.
Yeah.
So there'd be some other trade-offs associated with that, but you know, that's there are always opportunities
and
to
I,
change
I
things.
Understand all that technical side. I was asking from a pretending I'm a layman and asking
sure.
that same question. So no, I get it.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if in the document it's gonna be clear for a layman to understand why.
Yeah. Actually, the document walks through that screening process that we went through and explains why we picked the bridge scenario for each of these alternatives that we did.
Okay. Do these costs reflect the modifications you just previously discussed, the new updated costs?
I am not 100% certain. I'd have to confirm that. Some of the numbers were kind of happening.
I think they do.
And although I mentioned, you know, if it's a $10 million difference, remember that's a...
10 to 30.
Well, yeah. That's in that last decimal that we're showing here.
Okay. Well, I just wondered if that's something in addition or if these new costs reflected that as well.
I can't recall the exact timing of
sure.
when these got updated versus
okay.
when we made that change. And I mean, to some extent, it's in the rounding. I mean, it's you know, it wouldn't affect the decision, we'll say.
Sure.
We also updated the relocation estimates. And what this really reflects, actually in the bottom right corner, you can see what we were assuming back in February and what we've got now. And I think what you see here, I think will be similar to, may not be exactly what you see in the DEIS even. And essentially this reflects, you know, some of those, there have been, again, some changes to impacts. We've tried where we could to minimize the impacts. And actually, I think I forgot to mention, when we were talking about the modifications, one of the other changes that were made was in the northeast quadrant of the existing, for the west alternatives, the US 60, I-60, the I-69, US 60 interchange If you know where the police department is in Henderson, it happens to be also where our project office is. There's also some apartment complexes back there that we were going to impact. We've been able to greatly reduce those impacts to those apartment complexes. We also, in the process, managed to avoid relocating our own office. not part of the decision making, but we learned more, we gathered more data from February to now about, really it has to do with the number of units in many of the apartment buildings that we were affecting. Early on, we had not been able to confirm exact numbers. We'd been using some assumptions about, use things like, well, how many balconies or how many doorways can you obviously count, and how many, there's some factors based on parking spaces in the lot and this sort of thing. And it turned out we were underestimating the number of units in some of those buildings. And so we updated, that's kind of the difference you see between, especially on like West Alternative 1, where it went from, 213 back in February up to 242. It's not that we all of a sudden, changed something about the alternative that impacted 30 new houses. It was the same buildings. It was just that we now know more about those buildings. These numbers for West Alternative 1, I don't think the West alternatives here reflect the avoidance of those couple apartment buildings. So I think in the DEIS, you're going to see those numbers come down further. Not to, not from 240 to 10, but, from 240 to something closer to 200. So obviously this is a, the big question. I think some folks have been hinting at it. Ultimately paying for this project is a, it's going to be a bi-state project. It's going to involve funding from both states. But the traditional funding sources that we know of today don't cover the costs. And that's why the states early on determined that they, tolls were going to have to be part of the funding solution for this project. One of the things that we've, and this is some data that we've been, this is the same message we've been carrying, I think, for the past 6 months probably. Our traffic for, data, based on counts and origin destination studies and those sorts of things, shown that, and I think this is contrary to what some folks feel in the community, is that, traffic's all through, through traffic. If you just get all the through traffic off, all the trucks, all the through traffic off of 41, off of 41, everything will be, great, and, it's just the local folks who can stick to 41. Well, right now, 80% of that traffic is local traffic, and that means starting or finishing in the MPO's, region. It may be folks from Evansville headed out of the region, but it's, it's not these, Indianapolis to Madisonville trips or, we do expect to see some shift with that as we move forward, as the national corridor gets completed further, and certainly the section between here and Indianapolis gets completed. I think we're expecting to see some shift in that and a little, higher percentage of through trips. But it's still going to be, the Cross River traffic today and in the future is primarily local trips. I think this group's probably, heard most of this message that, I-69 will be tolled is the assumption. That's, kind of goes back to even the, agreement between the two governors that kind of re-jump-started this process was an acceptance, the recognition that I-69 would have to be tolled. What we don't know today is whether US 41, that existing US 41 bridge that would stay with West Alternative 1 and Central Alternative 1, whether in order to make this project financially feasible, that bridge might have to be tolled as well. I'm hoping that's not news. That message has gotten out to this group previously. That's something we've certainly been trying to make very clear over the last 6 months. But what we also know is that, the NEPA process, that environmental impact statement process, is not what's going to determine the final toll policy or the toll rates. What we're assuming in the DEIS, we're actually looking at both scenarios in the DEIS so that when that time comes, if that, there will be some kind of bi-state body established to make those decisions. They will have all the information they need about both of those scenarios in order to make a decision. So, we will basically be reporting impacts associated with both of those scenarios for West 1 and Central 1. Any questions about, I'm sure there's questions about tolling, but, just for folks, this is a message that we've been carrying out to folks in the community who, aren't familiar, who don't maybe travel existing toll facilities or more modern toll facilities. You know, we don't build toll facilities with toll booths anymore. You just don't do it. It's not, you know, there's safety issues, there's efficiency issues with it, certainly. So modern toll facilities are built with, you know, sensors, gantries that hold, you know, sensors, and you either pay the toll via a transponder, like an Easy Pass transponder, that's tied to an account or a prepaid account, if that. Or, you know, basic cameras take a picture of your license plate and mail you a bill. It's how it works. Again, the toll rate will not be set by this process, but we've, you know, for the purposes of analysis, we've been using the toll rates that went into effect initially. I know there's been a small increase recently in Louisville, but the initial toll rates from Louisville has been our kind of analysis point. And that's if you have a transponder and you're a single occupant or a single automobile or, you know, SUV or pickup truck or whatever, it would be a $2 toll. But if you don't have a transponder and the state has, you know, the tolling body has to mail you a bill, there's a transaction cost associated with that, and so they increase the toll to $4. And that really just covers, I mean, that's essentially the cost of the administration of, you know, getting that information, mailing the bill, collecting the money, that sort of thing. It's not a, you know, it's just that administrative cost. It's not a penalty, you know, it's not meant to be a penalty of any sort. It's just to recover that cost. You know, if you're a semi-truck, you know, with a transponder, that's a $10 toll. So that's just the example that we're using as a starting point. Yes?
So you said these were based off of Louisville, and Louisville, like, the income's a lot higher over there, so those people are going to be able to afford that. But if you're talking about veterans in Henderson that have to go to the VA hospital, mm-hmm. stuff like that, will they cost, economically, will they cost it down to what?
I mean, it comes down to a policy decision, really. As I said, it's not a, you know, that bi-state body is going to be established by the two states. The governors, you know, will establish that. And I don't want to say that it's a political decision, but it'll be a financial feasibility decision. What do the toll rates need to be in order to make this project financially feasible? It's not, you know, the tolling will not cover the cost of this, so it's not like the states are gonna, you know, turn this into some, you know, cash cow to pay for lots of other things. I mean, this is, you know, how much can we cover? But it's also important to keep in mind, you know, we are looking at those mitigation options for low-income users. That will also be part of that toll policy decision, ultimately. What you'll see in the draft environmental impact statement are some recommendations, you know, that we want to get feedback on. It may be that additional mitigation measures are put in place. You know, in different places, some of those have included, like in Louisville, for instance, they have a frequent user discount, effectively. Once you exceed a certain number of trips per month, and I want to say it's like 30, I think it's maybe even 40. Basically, if you commute every single day across the bridge, you, at the end of the month, they basically credit you back, I want to say it's half the toll that you pay. Now, if you only, I mean, unfortunately, if you only make 38 trips across the bridge, you actually pay the full toll. It's the system they set up there. I don't want to profess that it's the perfect one. Other places in the country have utilized a system whereby, you know, each year, basically, if you meet an income threshold, you come in basically with your, you know, I don't know if you bring in your tax return or your W-2 or whatever it is, and you say, you demonstrate that you meet an income threshold, and they get either free or discounted trips. You know, I think those are the, you know, that's all going to factor into that toll policy, and I think it's some of those decision makers are going to have to consider.
But I know in Louisville, the same arguments were being made that you're hearing, in particular from the Indiana side. We're shouldering the burden,
right,
the cost for tolls. It seems like these arguments are very similar, regardless. Once you enact tolling in general.
Yeah,
because the Kennedy, the Sherman Minton, all that stuff, you know, the Second Street Bridge, they were all, it was all free.
I'll say that while every place is unique, every city is unique, every city has the same conversations. You know, no city doesn't have those issues. You know, no place where they enact tolls do they not have income issues, or, you know, folks who have to commute for, you know, travel for medical need. It's something that has to be considered everywhere. Any other questions? I think that's about it. Just a quick schedule update. We are still on track to publish our draft environmental impact statement in November. That is when the preferred alternative will be identified. That preferred alternative will also identify a proposed tolling scenario for the existing 41 bridges. We will hold public hearings. There will be a formal comment period designated. And then approximately a year from then, in the fall of 2019, is when a final environmental impact statement and record of decision would be anticipated. That record of decision is kind of the Federal Highway Administration's, essentially the federal government's approval to move forward into the right-of-way acquisition and final design processes. So that's kind of their stamp of approval to keep going.
Any other questions, comments?
When will construction start?
Well, it depends on which alternative. In general, we are assuming, get my math right here, I want to say roughly 2021 is the soonest. I think first of 2022 is the soonest. And that would be if it was Central Alternative 1. If it were West Alternative 1 or West Alternative 2, we're assuming you'd add a year to that, just because of the right-of-way and utility process that would be associated with the US 41 commercial corridor there. And then construction would be, I believe we assumed 4 years for Central Alternative 1 and 5 years for the other two. I think that's what it is. It's a one-year difference between the two. That's what we assumed.
Any other questions? If not, Dan, thank you very much. It's very informative.
Absolutely. And the project team's always happy to come back and update you. I would assume that probably the next logical point in time would be the publication of the DEIS.
Right.
So just reach out to Janelle Lemon, who's our project manager.
And Syed and Pam wanted me to tell you it wasn't because of your presentation. It was because they had another meeting that actually in my building right down the street. So
I take no. They've heard all this stuff.
Yeah, they've heard it a few times.
They don't need to.
Absolutely. Changes, so. Is there any other business to bring for the technical advisory?
Other business.
Other business?
Yes. I have other business.
Okay.
We would like to announce that next Tuesday we will be sending out a formal announcement for a call for projects. It'll be for the Indiana LPAs only this time around. And it will be for fiscal years 2021 and later. So any project needing federal funding, excluding the FTA funding, will be eligible to apply. I'm going to be sending this information to the LPA employee responsible charge. And for the most part, there's a few exceptions, but for the most part, that'll be the county and city engineers. And I'm also going to be posting this information on our website so anybody can get on and take a look. And those applications will be due back to our office August 31st.
Okay.
If you have any questions, you can let me know, and I can help you walk through the process.
That's great. Thank you. Any other business? Any public comments? If not, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.